141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. As the country moves towards shutdown, Scottish teams are warned to stop training. One Scottish Premiership player is urging his fellow pros to use this time to prepare for life after football. And Clyde are hopeful their cup payday against Celtic can keep them going through these difficult times. I'm Gordon Duncan. Joining me in the studio is Gordon DL. And somewhere else joining us, thanks to the wonders of modern technology, is Roger Hannah. Roger, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Difficult days ahead, as you say, Gordon. Difficult times for everyone. And at a time when it's very difficult to look ahead with any certainty about what's going to happen in Scottish football, it's maybe a time to look back, as you said, at the top of the hour. 10 years ago to the day, a fantastic victory for St Mirren. We're looking for calls from St Mirren supporters who remember it. Maybe Celtic supporters who remember it. And, if anyone can remember, what happened to Rangers that night?
I'm sure you'll tell us in due course. Gordon DL, you are here. We're taking all the necessary precautions. You and I have had to travel separately, not allowed to even lower from the same neck of the woods.
Sad
we pulled
day.
Into the car park at the same time.
Kept away from you.
I didn't get the joys of your Joe Longthorne soundtrack on the way in. We were in separate vehicles, but we're here and we're ready to try and give people their football fix.
Well, Gordon, I'm going to start with a serious note. After 10 plus years of doing Super Scoreboard, you usually get days when you're driving in thinking, oh, this is going to be a hard, hard night. You're not looking forward to it. I have missed the listeners. I've missed the show in the sense of them phoning in. I don't care if they're going to slag my nose, my hair, my ability. I'm not bothered. I am delighted to be here.
Roger Hannah, what does self-isolation look like? You're going to have to paint the picture. Hugh Keevans has been working from home for the last couple of shows. He was describing in great detail his man cave. He's got his little rack of white and blue coloured shirts lined up behind him so that he's good to go. What sort of surroundings are you dealing with this evening?
I am in the living room, I have to say. I've been working from home since, I think, a week past on Friday, trying to help produce the Scottish Sun each day. Difficult from a laptop and often in the kitchen table or the dining room table. We're now working with an iPad. And as you say, the wonders of modern technology. We can communicate with yourself and Daz. We can help get the show out. And at a time when I think everyone's feeling a bit low, feeling a bit down, they're self-isolation, they're in quarantine, they can't get out and about, hopefully we'll be able to raise spirits for a couple of hours.
Roger, I've got to say, I thought that I was going to do the show like you from my house, but I was okay to come in tonight. And I had it all planned because I was going to up my bath nights. And I thought it would have been a great show, lying in the bath, listening and talking away. Fantastic. And I hope you enjoy it. We always talk about what we're going to have for dinner. We'll probably hear yours tonight.
They were very worried about you doing the show from the bath, Daz, because you always get FaceTime mixed up with the other buttons and it was just too much of a risk for Gordon and I.
Honestly, that's the least of my worries. He's been in here already talking about how he's got his home gym equipment sorted. Roger, he lives in a flat, of course, so he had the great difficulty getting it up the stairs, but he's now got it in. And most worryingly of all, he tells me that he's found an old mirror, a full length mirror that he's got, and he's planning to work out in front of it in the days and months that lie ahead. And he even floated the possibility, and I appreciate I run the risk of putting people off their dinner here, but he floated the possibility that he might not have to wear his usual, you know, gym gear because he's in on his own. So a frightening thought to kick us off.
It is a worry. I think that was a mirror he had in the ceiling in his last flat and it didn't quite fit this time. So it's now, he tells me it's now up against the wall, and he was telling me 3 flights with all those weights today. That was a workout before he even get the weights in the house.
141 951 1025. If you want to talk to us tonight, we would love to have you. We know these are really difficult times. It's getting more difficult as the days go on. As the measures get stricter, more of you are without work, without hobbies, without visits to your friends and family. So I know we can only play a really, really small part in making up for some of that, but we like to think we can try and make somewhat of a difference, and we'd love for you to join us and just talk football and try and have a bit of good fun along the way. So 01419511025 and on Twitter at Clyde SSB. Now, Roger, as you and Gordon well know, because we've got no football, no live football if you like to talk about. Something that's formed a real feature of the show in recent times has been to take a look at famous or infamous incidents from Scottish football on this day in years gone by. And I couldn't help but notice that today, not only is it the anniversary, but it's the 10-year anniversary of St Mirren 4, Celtic 0, the game which spelled the end for Tony Mowbray. And it got me thinking, as always, what's the defeat that still haunts you? That goes out to every single one of you, fans of all clubs. It can be, you know, a cup final, a league decider, but maybe something a bit more specific, something just in the middle of a season. Maybe it was a significant one that spelled the end for a manager or for players or whatever it may be. What's the defeat that still haunts you years on? 0141 951 1025. We couldn't get by without looking back on that one tonight, Roger.
No, and before Daz jumps in, I have to say, Mark Wilson was only at fault for three of them, not all four, that night. It was quite an incredible night. I touched on what happened to Rangers that night. It's forgotten in the mists of time. Rangers lost a Scottish Cup quarter-final to Dundee United at Tannadice, a goal in injury time by David Robertson. Rangers were chasing a treble, and David Robertson's goal ended the hopes of Walter Smith's team getting a treble. And no one remembers it, because all the headlines came from St Mirren Park. St Mirren 4, Celtic 0, Andy Dorman got a couple, Stephen Thompson got a couple, Tony Mowbray left the next day. And it always struck me as remarkable that, you know, the Rangers defeat, the fact it cost them the treble that season, no one remembers it.
Yeah, like I say, that's just the catalyst. I'm not going to spend hours or 2 hours talking about St Mirren 4, Celtic 0, but it is the catalyst to ask you, what's the defeat that still haunts you? What are your most, or your infamous, famous defeats, whatever you want to call them? Let us know on the phones or on Twitter, 0141 951 1025. And Celtic fans, St Mirren fans, what do you remember about that night, good or bad? Tell us everything that you can remember, a real trip down memory lane, 0141 951 1025. We are on Twitter as well, and Fraser Mortimer got in touch with me earlier, and he said, oh, no offence to Roger of course, but he says, I wish this was Thursday night, because he's referencing that 4-0 game, and he says, I would love to hear Gaw, that's you, Gordon, yeah, Dale, having a dig at Bungle, which is Mark Wilson, as we found out. But the great thing is, the first caller tonight is Mark in Cumbernauld. Mark, how are you?
How's it going, fellas?
Oh, I thought that was going to be Bungle. Do you have next to
join you in this 10-year anniversary?
When I phoned Mark earlier on, I said, we'll get you on the show 10 years to the day. I know Gordon would love the opportunity to wind you up about it. And he said, oh, thanks for reminding me. But good that he's on. He's going to shape Mark on a serious note. Just
that's
how...
that Wilson?
Of course it is.
No way.
It's me, Gordon.
That's no Mark Wilson.
It's his eye. I do sound different than a telephone.
Oh, so you, but listen, you played differently on the pitch. I actually thought that was a wind up. I'm saying, do you live near him?
Wow, it's going to be a tough show tonight, folks.
Oh, that mushroom.
On a serious note, Mark, how do you look back on a night like that when it has such serious consequences for, you know, a manager and for the club going forward? That must have been one of the most sort of surreal nights of your Celtic career.
I mean, if I'm being honest, things were building up to something bad anyway. Results haven't been great. The crowd had, you know, more or less seen enough at that time. The players, there was a look at defeat about the players running about that time, which should never be the case for a Celtic team. And we went into that night and we were awful. If you look at the starting 11 we had, you know, some good players in there. Robbie Keane and Samaras and McGeady played, and you had Edson Braithwaite at left back, who went on to play in a World Cup final. You know, so Ki Sung Young, who played, you know, many years in the Premiership. So a good side, but I just epitomised everything that was going wrong at the club at that time. And to lose a goal, I think it was close to half time, was a disaster. When you see some of the goals we lost after that, they were awful.
Did they come down your end, your side?
By the way,
yeah, it did, didn't it?
By the way, Dorman scored two, and I think he was playing left wing that night. So I was in a bit of the mixed as anyway for a couple of them.
That doesn't surprise me.
And it is a defeat that then obviously costs Tony Mowbray's job. Mark, explain the sort of timeline of that. You know, what it was like in the dressing room after. Did you know that was coming? How does it play out over the following day or two?
Nah, I mean, I remember, things were in total disarray, and I mean, not even after the game. I remember probably about the 75th minute or something like that. I think Tony put on an attacking sub, and he moved Aidan McGeady to somewhere foreign on the pit, left back or something like that. And I'm standing on the touchline as a right back, kind of having a, not an argument, but a discussion to Mark Venus, saying, what's going on here? Where are we playing? What shape are we playing? And it was all falling apart then. Went in the dressing room, very little said after the game. You know, everybody obviously hugely disappointed. Not much said. Back to the ground, some supporters were there waiting for us, you know, vented their anger like you'd expect them to. And we were in training the next day. Walked into Lennox Town the next day, and there was a notice on the dressing room door saying there was a meeting at 11 o'clock. And we usually started training at 11 o'clock. So had the meeting, manager came in, and he was up for the fight. You know, he says it was a terrible result. We let ourselves down, let the fans down, this, that, and the next thing. And we needed to stick together to pull through. And, you know, no joking about it, when I left the training ground, he was still the manager. And Peter Lawwell was on his way in. And by the time I got back to Cumbernauld, it was that quick. He was away. So very quick, we left that training ground at Lennox Town thinking Tony would still carry on and would still be... Would still be playing under him, and that changed very, very quickly. I think it was the next day Neil Lennon was appointed the interim.
And Roger Hanna, the rest, as they say, is history. That kicks off Neil Lennon's successful relationship with Celtic in a managerial capacity.
Yeah, and listen, there's a story. Mark can probably tell you the truth of this. After the training, I think Peter Grant was involved in the backroom team, wasn't he, at the time, Mark?
Yeah, that's right.
Peter, being a Celtic man, died in the will. Knew the consequences of a 4-0 defeat to St Mirren, and he was in clearing out his locker, and Mark Venus, the number two, came in and said, Peter, what are you doing? We've just trained the boys and everything's fine. And Peter said, no, it isn't. This is it. We're finished. I know. We're done. And Mark Venus disagreed with him, and within a matter of a few minutes, as you say, Peter Lawwell was there, and Peter Grant was proved correct.
There we go. Well, thank Mark and Cumbernauld. We'll see you on Thursday.
Cheers, guys. Have a good show.
Looking forward to Bungle. Judge Jeffrey.
Have a good one.
That was Mark Wilson joining us on the line. Like I say, that's just the catalyst for tonight's discussion. It's the 10-year anniversary of Celtic 4, St Mirren 4, Celtic 0, I should say, in Paisley. So we're asking you, what are the defeats that still stay with you? The defeats that still haunt you, the defeats that still annoy you? And they might not even be the obvious ones. It might not be the ones that cost you the title. It might not be the ones that cost you a cup win. But maybe for some reason, the nature of the defeat, maybe it was a heavy scoreline, anything you want. You tell us the detail. What are the defeats that still live with you 5 years on, 10 years on, maybe even 20 years on? Let us know on the phones. Gordon, what would be...
Oh, I've got a couple.
Because I'll make it more of a challenge for you. Skip by the obvious ones, right? Because we always wind you up.
7-0-1
And the five, yeah, against Rangers. But ultimately they were...
Five? Never lost five.
Four, sorry, my apologies.
Yeah, that was cup final, yeah.
But it was successful to get there in the first place. Yeah. So, you know, I'm thinking maybe...
No, I've got one. It always stands out for me, Gordon, is the Scottish Cup quarter final at Inverness. It always stands out. I can still see myself looking in the mirror in that dressing room, sorting my tie, thinking, yeah, you're looking okay here. What are we going to get in the next round? We were 3-0 up, absolutely cruising.
At halftime?
Halftime, cruising. My team talk was fantastic, inspiring, everything about it. Had the boys really pumped right up for it. We lost 4-3. And I had to get a police escort. I was the only person, I think, to get a police escort out of Inverness. I had to get the police to take me to the team bus because Area United fans were not pleased at all. And that was the longest journey I've ever had in football.
Never his fault, Roger.
No, never his fault at all. To be fair, he had more good cup wins than cup defeats. You know, I can remember that as a 4-3 over your beloved Motherwell at Firth Park when I know you had divided loyalties that day. I think Glenn Hurst and Neil Tarrant scored goals that day for Ayr. That was a great win.
Classic, but, yes.
If we're throwing it open, the one that still grates for me, Scotland 0, Italy 1, 2007. It was a qualifier. We thought we were getting to Euro 2008. Dreadful decision. Alan Hutton wrongly penalised when the free kick should have gone in his favour. Ball in the box, Christian Panucci header, and we didn't make it.
Right, let's get the calls in. We're here until 8 o'clock, so let's build up as many of your opinions, thoughts, memories as we can. The defeats that still live with you. The reason we ask, though, is the 10-year anniversary of that game in Paisley. St Mirren 4, Celtic 0, and Tony Mowbray paid the price the following day. Let's speak to Frank in Paisley, though. He is a St Mirren fan. You must have been there, Frank. It's one of the most famous nights for your club in recent times.
Hi.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, yeah, season ticket holder for St Mirren. It was my son's 16th birthday, and decided that it would be better to spend the day and the night with him.
So no.
I missed it.
Oh no, not at the game.
He's not at the game. I'm sitting in the living room watching it. We had friends over, having a wee tea and things like that. And we had friends over having a wee tea and basically sitting watching it on the TV, couldn't believe it.
And did it feel awkward resenting your 16-year-old son on his birthday?
Well, he's obviously, he turns 26 today, so...
Oh, happy birthday, of course he does.
Yeah, aye. He's never lived it down. But all my friends at the football obviously remind me of it every year.
I mean, that's the thing, Gordon. You can watch it on the telly, you're having your tea, your birthday cake, but it's just not the same. As soon as the goals start raining in, you're thinking, what have I done?
Yeah, got to be. Listen, we were in the same boat. But how long ago? 3-4 weeks, Gordon, on our way to Fir Park and the cup against St Mirren. And it was 4-1 at half time. And only because my hip decided I couldn't get there, you packed it in. You actually drove up to Fir Park and then deserted the team when they needed you. And we were sitting, actually texting each other, going, can't believe this. And I could hear the, because I had the window open, I could hear the roars, and it went back to extra time. But unfortunately, we still lost.
There we go. Well, Frank, you've got the happy memory of watching it on TV anyway. That was Frank and Paisley kicking us off tonight. 01419511025. We're going to get travel, then we're going to get stuck right in to all your calls, all your tweets. What is the defeat that still haunts you, still lives with you? And the more obscure, the better. The cup final ones, the league deciders, they're obvious and they're fine. We'll take them as well. But what about those other random ones that for some reason you just can't get over? 01419511025, and we'll speak to you next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Road Accident Solicitors. The compensation you deserve when you've been sidelined. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Gordon DL is here. Roger Hanna joins us from his living room as well. Everything's still okay? You've not been kicked out because the soaps are starting, the dinner's not causing you too much grief in the background? Everything okay?
No, everything's okay so far. I think the rest of the family are running scared of getting a row from Daz.
Quite right, good stuff, you'll keep them in line, I'm sure. We are on Twitter tonight as well as the phones, and we're asking you, fans of all clubs, what are the defeats that still annoy you years on? It can be the obvious ones, cup finals, league deciders, relegation deciders, or maybe just a random mid-season hammering of a team that you should never have lost to. What are the defeats that still haunt you? The reason we ask, it's 10 years to the day since St Mirren beat Celtic 4-0, and it spelled the end for Tony Mowbray. So give us your thoughts on Twitter or on the phones. We've got loads coming in on Twitter, as you would expect. Let's just get a flavour of them. Jim McLaughlin says, only one candidate. Thursday night, Tannadice, 16th of May 1996, Owens Coyle scores a winner in extra time, and the Jags are down and nearly out of business one season later. We were staying up with 20 seconds to go as well. Ruined football for years, he says. You'll remember that, Roger?
Yes, I certainly do. Now, there seemed to be a series of games around that time between Dundee United and Partick Thistle. You know, tremendous fixtures, always on a knife edge, always exciting. But yeah, I remember that one well.
Loads on Twitter, like I say. Linton Dawson, 1972 European Cup semi-final, Inter Milan 0-0, goes to penalties. Dixie misses the first penalty, everyone else scores and we're out. I was 16 and had been saving to go to the final. The next day went into Hepworth's Tailors and bought new clobber. There we go. Every cloud.
I remember that one. I remember the penalty kick. It's still coming down as we speak.
And Mikey says it's not even a defeat, but the one that haunts me, Pedro Caixinha's last game at Rangers. Daniel Candeias misses a late penalty to make it 2-0. Kilmarnock go up the park, make it 1-1. He leaves the next day. Could have been very different if the penalty had gone in. Let's speak to Gary in Shettleston. What's the defeat that still annoys you, Gary? The one that haunts you all these years later?
Well, years later on, aye, Gordon DL will love this one.
Go on, Gary.
Scott McDonald.
Oh no, sorry, Gar. I was going down a different path there. I actually thought you were going to mention the 94.
Nah, no one mentions it. Everyone's forgotten about that one.
Everybody hasn't forgotten about that because I keep reminding them of that.
Helicopter Sunday, as it became to be known. Gary, where were you? Were you there? Were you in TV?
I was in the local pub. My big friend Tony Gallagher, as soon as that second goal in, the two just left the pub and just went right up the road green.
Up the road greeting. That's one way to sum it
up,
Roger Hannah.
Going up the road crying.
It's funny, I always seem to be the wrong game, because we were talking earlier on about St Mirren 4 Celtic 0 that night. I was at Tannadice watching Rangers lose to Dundee United, and Helicopter Sunday, when all the drama was unfolding at Fir Park, Scott McDonald was scoring those two against Celtic. I was actually covering Hibernia 0 Rangers 1 at Easter Road and trying desperately to work out what on earth was going on.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I was obviously there at Fir Park, but the home end was full of Celtic fans that day as well, Gordon, because they obviously wanted to be there for the title party. Loads of them had managed to get in. So it was just weird. You know, you had pockets of the home end that were absolutely distraught, you know, when Scott McDonald pops up with those two goals. And it's funny that Gary mentions it, you know, at a time when we're robbed, and it's completely different this season because Celtic had a healthy lead, but we're robbed of any sort of climax to the season. That was the ultimate, really, that we've had in recent times.
Yeah, because I think everyone really thought that Celtic had it in the bag, Gordon, and it happened to be an ex-Celtic player, a very good one, good goal scorer, that got the goals.
No, went on to play for Celtic, you mean?
Yeah, went on to play for Celtic, that got the goals. And it was an extraordinary day that, you know, everybody, as I say, thought Celtic had it wrapped up. And it just showed you it's never over until the Fat Lady sings.
Few days like that at that time. If you remember a couple of years earlier, Daz, the sort of shootout Sunday, Celtic won 4-0 at Kilmarnock, Rangers won 6-1 against Inverness at Ibrox to pinch you by a goal. And then there was that 2008, the mad year when Rangers went to the UEFA Cup final. The year when sporting integrity came into the lexicon of Scottish football. Celtic won the league on a Thursday night at Tannadice. I think Jan Venegård of Hesselink might have scored the clinching goal. Rangers were losing to Aberdeen up at Pittodrie. Celtic won it, you know, amid crazy scenes on Tayside. And that was the third time in five or six seasons it had gone down to that dramatic last day.
Is that the type of defeat, Gary, you're saying it still sort of haunts you, it still annoys you. Is that the type that at the time takes days to get over, weeks? I don't know, what is it like? Are you able to kind of park that stuff and move on, or was it still absolutely bugging the life out of you?
No, that was me more or less early summer, but the football started back again. That's how bad that was.
Summer holidays completely ruined. Gary lay in the beach every day with his face tripping him from May onwards. That's what football does to you. Yeah. That's why we're missing it. And that's why we're just trying our best to take a bit of a trip down memory lane. So anything you've got, fans of all teams, what's the defeat that still really annoys you? I'm definitely on the lookout for some more obscure ones here, because, I mean, Gary, it's a great example, but it's quite a memorable one. I'm looking for these bizarre ones, you know, just a 3-0 defeat against your closest rivals. It should never have happened, and it might not even have meant anything in the big picture, but it really annoys
now,
you.
You're a big fan of football, obviously, big Motherwell supporter as well. No, have you got anything that stands out there for you?
Albion Rovers in the Scottish Cup at Hamilton.
Oh, that's, yeah.
But
yeah,
I was working, so you've got that. I was, you know, very professional at the time. Wouldn't get too disappointed.
It's after it.
But that was a very good and successful Stuart McCall team in the Premiership that then get put out of the cup.
Lanarkshire
against Albion Rovers. So that would be, that was not
Gary
ideal.
Phillips, the goal scorer.
Yes.
Everyone's famous for 15 minutes. That was Gary Phillips, 15 minutes. And quite a fantastic win for Albion Rovers. Not even a home win, because you say it was neutral territory that day.
Yep.
And it was just part of a spell. You'll be able to tell me better, Gordon. Motherwell just couldn't win in plastic surfaces around that time, could they?
And also, someone would need to remind me, but I think, such as the hard-working individual that I am, I think I had been working at a lunchtime kickoff somewhere, and then came to do a second game in the afternoon.
That's why you've reached the top. You've put the hours in. You've put the graft in. Let me tell you, you're a bit like me.
Is this what you consider the top in here with you on a Tuesday night?
And wow. Hannah sitting me steak pie and potatoes as we speak.
Yeah, there we go. Well, funnily enough, Hayden's on next. He's a Motherwell fan from Paisley. The defeats that you just can't get over, Hayden?
Hi guys, how you doing? Just before I go any further, I just want to say, I know it must be pretty hard for you now, with the lack of football, coming up with things to talk about, but it really is great having sort of the normality of being able to listen to the show, so I just want to say thanks guys, you're doing a good job.
Hayden, really appreciate you even saying that, because that's it in a nutshell. We can't promise that it's going to be the same as it always is, and Roger's not here, and we're trying our best, patching it together just to try and bring a bit of normality. So thanks a lot for acknowledging it. We don't need the acknowledgement, but it's kind of you anyway. What was your defeat that still lives with you?
Yeah, so as you know, I'm a Motherwell fan, and I just missed out, so I was just too young to go to the 91 Cup final. So the four cup finals that I've been to in my lifetime, we've scored one goal and conceded 12. So yeah, pretty much it's a collective nightmare for me. But the worst one was obviously the first one, the League Cup final against Rangers. It was the first time I had really been to such a big occasion game. I was amazed when I went into the stadium and seen all the build up, and it wasn't fireworks back then, it was the things that blow hot air and all that. And then after about, was it 7 minutes or something, was it Bert Conterman scored an absolute screamer from about 40 yards out.
That was
heartbreaking, man. That was
yeah,
and it didn't get any better, unfortunately.
I can sympathise with Hayden, because we must be of a similar age, and he's right, that was just that was so deflating early on. That was the Davy Cooper final though, that Alex was talking about last night. I'll be honest, do you want to know which cup final defeat annoys me the most? It's the one that Mark Wilson claims that he scored in.
Oh yeah, the own goal.
So that's come to annoy me more. Hayden's right, that probably was the most annoying one. But since then, since working with him, you know, when Celtic beat Motherwell in the Scottish Cup final,
was it Craigan?
It was definitely a Stephen Craigan own goal, and Mark Wilson claims that he scored it.
Mark
and
Wilson
that just annoys
he's got
me.
A cap.
That just annoys me so
and
much.
And he warmed up at Wembley. That's his claim. I've got a cap and he warmed up.
Roger, that Hayden sums up the life of a so-called wee team there, because you make it to your cup finals, it's your big day, but if you come up against the Old Firm in form, there's very little you can do. And over the last, so that will be Hayden's going back to 2005, I think. So over the last,
this army of Motherwell fans might know better than me. Was Conterman's goal not the semi-final a couple of years earlier, 2003, the 4-3 game, when Motherwell were absolutely outstanding and should have won the game?
I think you're right, Roger, the semi-final, and it was to what you call the traditional Celtic end, am I right there?
No, hold on.
Yeah, because the final was a 5-1 game.
Yeah,
did
Morris
Ross. Sotirios Kyriakos not scored a couple? Moore Ross, who's now at Motherwell, scored a goal as well.
Yeah, we've just been to that many cup finals, we're getting mixed up here, Roger.
Hayden, you want to come back in?
Yeah, I was hoping to actually get on Friday and talk about the best games that I can remember, because I've been watching them on YouTube for about the past 3 weeks in a row, the playoff final against Rangers, so to put a bit of a positive note on it. But yeah, that's been keeping me going, watching our better performances, I suppose.
No, that's the thing, the wonders of modern technology, you can dig these things up.
Gordon, I'll tell you, if people are listening and you look at your football, I went back to the olden days. Sir Matt Busby, Lanarkshire man, made his way down at Manchester United. I saw in a film there, I sat and I watched it yesterday. Style of management, the way the players used to train, it was incredible. What a fantastic watch.
Yeah, I think you were right, Roger, hey, on the detail.
To YouTube tonight. There's only one Motherwell game to watch, really. Motherwell 6, Hibs 6, surely.
Very true, very true indeed. You were right on the detail, that's fine. We can let Hayden off of that. He's obviously trying to remove it from his memory, erase it from his memory, which is understandable. Let's take another one. Stevens and Paisley, what's the defeat that still haunts you, Stephen?
Good evening, guys. Thanks for taking my call. We're just talking about the Celtic game for 10 years ago. I've got a flip side of that. If it's St Mirren against Hammarby, 1985. We're 1-0 up. I think it was Frank McGarvey scored in the first half. And we lost. We got beat 2-1. We actually lost 3 goals. I think one was disallowed. In the last three, four minutes, they'd scored 2 goals and put us out of the UEFA Cup. So that was a bit of a stinker for us that night.
Roger?
Yeah, and I remember the first leg had been in Sweden. Was it not a 3-3 draw, I think, over there? St Mirren had been terrific. I have a feeling maybe Brian Gallagher was among the scorers. I can't quite remember. And it was expected St Mirren would come home and win the game. Sorry. Frank McGarvey had them ahead from early on. And then 2 goals in the last 5 minutes. Completely turned the game on its head.
Well, I think the Brian Gallagher, that's, I think it's still a record to this day. It's the last person to score a hat-trick in European soil, a Scotsman, in a European tie.
Is that right? I couldn't even have told you it was a hat-trick. I seemed to remember scoring one or two. Yeah. I didn't know he'd get a hat-trick.
He got a hat-trick. But the best of it was, myself, my two mates, we'd left the ground with 5-6 minutes to go, and we flagged a taxi down getting to the Hackney, and the Hackney driver says, "Unlucky, boys." I thought, "What's going on?" He says, "He's just got beat." I said, "No, what a one on." He says, "No, they've actually scored 3 goals. One was disallowed, you're out." That one, no.
Stephen, I hope you learned a harsh lesson there. And I've always said, and I say to every supporter, never leave the game early. Stay to the whistle. Then you can just walk down the road.
It might have been worse. It might have been worse if I'd stayed and watched the goals, you know. So at least I never seen them.
Yeah. And it was a great St Mirren team as well. It was a team a couple of years later which would win the Scottish Cup. But, you know, prior to the Scottish Cup, I think McGarvey, who scored that night, left. Steve Clark wasn't the St Mirren team that night, I think, they lost to Hammarby. Because he famously talks about having a chance to go to Chelsea. Obviously grasped the chance to go to Chelsea. The downside was, just not long after he left, St Mirren won the Scottish Cup.
That's correct, yeah, 87, yeah. Anyway, that was my point, guys, so thanks for taking the call, thank you.
Stephen and Paisley, thanks so much for getting in touch. Loads of people trying to give us a call or tweet tonight, which is great. I know everyone's a bit all over the place, maybe even a bit down given what's going on at the moment, so just a trip down memory lane to try and get the imagination going, brighten things up a bit. Scott Mitchell's got, he's gone recent. Scott's gone very recently. He says Sam Cosgrove against Dumbarton when he dived inside the box to score a penalty in this year's Scottish Cup. That was only a couple of months ago. So Scott's not letting it go.
Hashtag Jim Duffy.
Yeah, we'll speak to him tomorrow night. Yeah. See what you think. Scott Vaines has got a good one, Roger. He says, worst one, losing 3-0 to Ayr in the Cup in 98 when Andy Walker scored that penalty, says Scott on Twitter.
I was actually at that game covering it. One of the more remarkable penalties you've ever seen. It was just sheer impudence. I think we're Kilmarnock lost back-to-back years. I think Kilmarnock were holders 97. And then they lost to Ayr. I have a feeling they might have lost 2-0. And then, would you believe, the next year they were drawn again against Ayr at Somerset Park. And this time they lost 3-0. Andy scored the penalty. I think he might have scored from open play as well. I think Andy Lyons. Was Andy Lyons still there when you were manager, Daz?
If you recall all those games, I'm trying to think who the manager was, because he gets so much praise. I played Kilmarnock, Premier League team, 3 times. Never lost a goal.
Who was it? Put us out our misery. We can't possibly imagine.
It was Andy Lyons who scored the other goal for you, though, was it not?
I remember Kilmarnock turning up that day, and they came in and they were a bit confident, let's say, and 2-0 down. I never ever watched penalty kicks, even at 2-0. Very confident that we were going to win the game, and obviously Andy scored, and I never knew what he'd done before.
So for anyone who didn't see it, Panenka, right?
Yeah,
and you didn't see it.
I didn't see it until I watched it in the TV later on at night.
01419511025. We're going to speak to Sharon in Toll Cross. It is the 10-year anniversary of St Mirren 4 Celtic 0. It spelled the end for Tony Mowbray, and it just got us thinking, what's the defeat that still annoys you to this day? Let us know, and we could be speaking to you next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the league leader for compensation. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Roger Hanna is here in voice. He's not present in the building, but he's here nevertheless. Gordon DL very much here. We've had to keep an eye on him after last week. As you can imagine, there's lots of cleaning equipment around the studio, quite rightly so, trying to keep everyone safe. But I did just look over your shoulder and I spotted the bottle of industrial strength mic cleaner,
the empty bottle, you mean,
that you were using on your hands last Thursday. It's not to be used on the skin, but you applied it every 10 minutes for the full show. And then we discovered, someone actually tweeted in earlier, forgive me for losing it and not remembering who it was, but they wanted to know if you've grown any extra fingers after.
No, I'm not grown. I can't hold a pen. That's the problem. That was a bad night, I've got to say. Thursday was a bad night. I called someone Edward. What else did I achieve?
Did you happen to catch this, Roger Hanna?
Well, listen, he does this thing every week, so when he makes little mistakes like that, it now just kind of rolls over me, I have to say.
It was one after the other. I think it was Edward from Renfrew, I think, phoned in, and he just went into autopilot, and I caught, and he didn't even realise he was doing it. He started calling him Eduard.
Yeah, nothing the matter with a little flamboyant pronunciation, does.
Listen, we had Bungle phoning in tonight. It could have been Edward.
Then you had your Barry Bannon incident.
Barry Bannon was a poor one for me.
I must admit, we're not taking the health and...
There's going to be a Christmas outtakes tape, I think, that needs to be compiled by Andy, the producer, Gordon.
Yeah, it would just be Gordon alone, I think. That's why I must admit, when I heard that, you know, Hugh Keevan's working from home, I thought, right, technology aside, that'll be fine. Roger Hanna's working from home, fine. If the day comes when you need to do it from home, I'll be worried, because I can't trust you. I don't think the concentration levels will be there. You'll be doing something else.
I'll be in the bath.
You'll be googling the full time teaser. It's got me worried already.
I've got to say, if I'm at home like Roger and that full time teaser, if he's not getting that full time teaser tonight, he's in trouble. Get right onto the iPad, Google up, fire a few texts into me, Roger, and we'll sort it out. John Smith, no more.
Back to the phones. 01419511025. The defeats that still annoy you to this day. Sharon and Tollcross, what would you put in that category?
Hi, I've got two. I've got one for my club and one for my country.
Go for it.
The one for my club was my birthday, and I was convinced we were winning it. We were in Seville. And I was at Cumbernauld Theatre watching it on the champagne, and I was up kissing the screen when the Henwick scored his second goal. And I gripped my eyes out for 2 days after it. And my one for my country is Italy at Hampden. I thought we were in the group of death, and I thought we were doing it. We were in extra time. It was time to go. We were going to the Euros and at the expense of one of the biggest teams in the world, and then they cheated, and I gripped my eyes out that night. I know
there's a lot of crying going on here, Sharon. That's
the two nights that broke me to my tears, like tears with that body. Two nights.
You don't sound a happy girl, Sean.
Well, I'm normally quite happy. I'm normally, even if I, especially with Scotland, I'm one of them up at the tribe for hardest. But that night, and what we were doing that night, you know, going through the group of death was just, I was up there, and then, you know, within seconds it was gone.
Yeah, that was a sore one. There's always something a bit extra about it, Roger, as well, because as Sharon mentions, in both of them, the thing that would sort of tie those two together, if you were a Celtic fan and if you were a Scotland fan, the opposition would have been absolutely doing your nutting at the certain things that went on in the game. Sometimes, I mean, with Hayden, the Motherwell fan, on, you turn up to a cup final or a big game, if you're beaten fair and square by a far superior team, you kind of take it in the chin. But when there's that extra bit of needle involved, it makes it harder to get over.
Yeah, there was a sort of cynicism about that Porto team in Seville back in 2003, and we can look back now 17 years on and see that same cynicism has been through every Jose Mourinho team. But at that time, Jose Mourinho was just a young coach making his way in the game. Very few people knew anything about him, and we didn't know how, you know, he was going to put his teams out in years to come. But, you know, Celtic, they say it's the hope that kills you. And all the way through that run to Seville in the final itself, there was so much hope for Martin O'Neill's team. You know, they beat Blackburn away. They won at Anfield. They beat the likes of Stuttgart. Even in the semi-final, having drawn at home with Boavista, they got that late winner when Henrik Larsson scored in Porto to go through. And it almost seemed written in the stars they were going to win, particularly when Larsson scored the two goals in Seville. And then it's so cool. Sharon says, you know, the Celtic supporters felt it so deeply just because of the dramatic nature and the kind of cynical way Porto performed.
So was that on your actual birthday, Sharon, or was that a birthday celebration?
It was on my actual birthday, and I was on the champagne for 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So basically you think about it every year, you can't shake it?
Oh, aye. Every time it's my birthday, I think about that. It's just horrible. I mean, I was mega proud of them. But even the interview with Henry after it, and he held his medal, and he went, I didn't come here for that.
Sounding happy news, Sean.
But that's football. That's what it does. It ruins your birthday forevermore if a result doesn't go your way. Thank you very much to Sharon in Tollcross. You look confused. What's wrong with you?
No, I'm just thinking
just
of
your normal face.
I'm just thinking of any football matches that's ever ruined my birthday, and I've had a few birthdays. I'm not getting any at all.
All right. Well, I think that's a very niche topic for another day.
Mm-hmm.
5 weeks into the shutdown, we might need that. So note that one down.
I've got a notepad.
We'll see how we get on. Tom in Cumbernauld, as a Rangers fan, Tom, What are the ones that the defeat that really just annoys you still to this day? The one that bugs the life out of you? Can you pick one?
First of all, good evening, Roger. Got the legend Gordon and yourself. And thanks for doing a fantastic job. When there's no football at the moment, because I'm missing that quite badly.
Nah, no problem, Tom.
Because of the coronavirus. But also, my two worst defeats, as I would say, obviously as a Rangers fan, the 5-1 defeats before Stephen Gerrard came in, particularly the first one when Matt Warburton was in charge. And I think the Rangers fans were looking forward to a victory again, they went and pear-shaped. But yeah. Also, I think my most memorable one would be the Ian Durant Cup final when they played Aberdeen. I think it was 3-each. It was a tremendous game. And that's my most memorable cup final.
Let's start take them in order. Roger, that run that Celtic went on against Rangers when they became... The head-to-heads were mismatches at times, and you can understand why, as a Rangers fan, Tom would be hugely annoyed at that and sort of look back on it unable to shake it off, because it's one thing losing a game, but when you're losing that game to your ultimate rival so heavily, it must have been extremely, well, brilliant for one side and really difficult for the other.
Yeah, I think was there a 5-1, a 5-0 and a 4-0, and among the 4-0 was at the semi-final at Hampden that famously ended up with Graham Murty and Lee Wallace and Kenny Miller in the war of words, if you like. I think the 5-0 was almost a league clincher for Celtic as well. So painful days. Even this season, a completely different type of game, but this season's League Cup final pained Rangers fans as well, because they played so well. They were superior in the game, and yet somehow just couldn't get past Fraser Foster. The goal was scored by Christopher Julien, and Celtic went away with, I think, a ninth or tenth straight trophy. But going back to the other game, I think Tom mentioned that, people have been talking about the 3-3 this week because yesterday, of course, tragically, the 25th anniversary of the such early passing of Davy Cooper. Davy Cooper scored that fantastic free kick in the 3-3 game against Aberdeen. Ian Durant scored, as Tom said. Durant also scored the clinching penalty, I think, in the shootout after Peter Nicholas had missed. Robert Fleck, he sent the game into extra time, scoring really, really late on. One of the great cup finals.
Yeah, and Gordon, the one that Tom kicked off with as well, that Mark Warburton one, you talk about maybe sort of big moments in football as well and consequences for winners and losers. If you think that was really the real arrival of Moussa Dembele, I think if you go back to the day of the game, I think was the big news not that Lee Griffiths is out and he's Celtic's main man and we're going to have to do with this new guy Moussa Dembele, who's not quite hit the ground running yet. Hopefully he's up to the fixture.
I think
he goes and knocks in a hat trick and never looks back.
Yeah, I think all the pundits were asking the same question, Gordon. What's Brendan Rodgers thinking about here? Griffiths was banging goals in for fun as well. But he always seemed to... We always had the debate. Every time Celtic played Rangers, Rangers played Celtic, we always had the debate. Who is he going to... Because he only plays one striker.
But I think I think Griffiths was unavailable, I think.
Yeah, but Dembele at that time just come on the scene and he was... That hat-trick was absolutely terrific. I think as a Rangers fan then, if you were turning up to the games, it wasn't a case of... We might get a result today. You knew Celtic were going to win these games. Nowadays it's different. I thought I'd have heard a few Rangers fans on, not rather than talking about that. The biggest disappointment, I think, is probably not that long ago, was the League Cup final where they really played well. They dominated the game. They had the greatest chance in the world to win their first trophy in years. And I think that would have been a massive disappointment if I was a Rangers supporter myself, Gordon.
Thank you, Tom and Cumbernauld. And what did I say about football defeats having a sometimes strange impact on the rest of your life? Listen to this one to round us off from Shieldsy Shields on Twitter. When Lyon knocked Celtic out of the Champions League back in December 2003, I knocked back a free ticket to see Kings of Lyon in Brixton Academy because their name just hurts so much.
No way. Seriously?
Roger, I don't really know where to go from that one. You get any Kings of Lyon puns that you would like to to throw in there? No.
No, I don't think so. No, I'll let that one be. We're a bit before the watershed, so I think that's taking things too far. Knocking back tickets for a gig like that just because of the name? No way.
I take it they're quite good because I'm not a big Kings of Leon or whatever they're called fan.
I don't think they're.
So
I don't.
Modern day Joe Longthorn.
I don't think they're up your street. Nah.
No, but
now you're more Joe Longthorn, and
I'm a bit more. Yeah, sort of romantic, slow. You know, nice easy words, nice lyrics. Yeah, he's a listening, Roger. You're right. He's a listening, and I will be stocking up in my music over the next coming weeks.
Time for this, I think.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
It is Beat the Pundit time, your chance to win a signed ball. I've got a new way of advertising it, Gordon, because now it's the signed ball that you can do all your home keepy-uppy challenges with during self-isolation. If you've run out of toilet roll and you don't want to be booting the Kleenex up and down the living room during these difficult times, then try and win a signed ball. 01419511025. Call us before the news at 7 and you could be playing Beat the Pundit next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. The form team for compensation for more than 40 years. Talk to Thompsons.com.
Gordon Dalziel is here. Roger Hannah joins us on the show as well. He's working from home, keeping things safe at the moment. We've not lost you during the news or anything, have we, Roger?
No, definitely not. Still here, raring to go for the second hour of the show.
Crystal clear. I've laughed earlier and I've lost the tweet, but someone tweeted, very concerned though, of course, to say, oh, Roger Hanna sounds awful. I hope he's okay. But I think that's just down to the fact that you're on a slightly different connection rather than the fact that you're ill, yes?
Yes, touch wood. Good. I'm fighting right. Fit just now. I think good. It's just the technology, Gordon.
I thought the bungle sound worse. I didn't even recognise him.
Yeah, I think he's fine as well. We'll see him on Thursday. Right, I think it takes us up now to time for this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
We do actually have some Scottish football coronavirus breaking news for you that will bring you as soon as we're done with Beat the Pundit. Let's speak to tonight's contestant first though. He is John and he's from East Kilbride. How are you tonight, John?
I'm alright, Gordon.
Tell the truth, John. Are you only on because you need a signed ball to boot about the house during self-isolation?
No. Nothing else to do. We're bored. Usual.
Quite right. That's why we're here, John. Trying to cure a bit of that boredom. So usually I would toss the coin, but just to keep things simple tonight, Gordon Dalziel's going to play because you're here, so I can control you. Roger Hanna's elsewhere, so you'll play.
Toss it anyway.
You want to toss the coin anyway? Just
to say.
Right. Okay.
Hold on.
I dropped it that time.
I bet it's got to be me.
Think so?
Yeah.
It is as well.
Oh, yes.
Tails.
Okay. All the best, John.
Right, I'm going to give Gordon some Clyde 2 in his ear. That way he can't hear what you're saying, John. I'm going to put 30 seconds on the clock. You can pass. Your time starts now. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Which former Celtic manager started his playing career with Distillery in Northern Ireland?
Neil Lennon.
Where did Neil McCann finish his playing career?
Dundee.
Which country is former Rangers player Shota Avaladze from?
Georgia.
How many league goals has Lauren Shanklin scored this season?
25.
Who is the current manager of Partick Thistle?
Ian McCall.
In 2000, which championship team shared Clifton Hill with Albion Rovers? Not a championship team anymore, my apologies. Who were Aberdeen's opponents the last time they won the Scottish Cup in 1990?
Celtic.
Okay. Let's bring Gordon back. Gordon, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can.
Yep. All right. Same set of questions to you. Great stuff. Your time starts now. Which former Celtic manager started his playing career in Northern Ireland with Distillery?
Martin O'Neill.
Where did Neil McCann finish his playing career?
Pass.
Which country is former Rangers player Shota Avaladze from?
I know that one. Pass.
How many league goals has Lauren Shanklin scored this season?
26.
Who is the current manager of Partick Thistle?
Ian McCall.
In 2000, which Scottish team shared Clifton Hill with the Albion Rovers?
Hamilton Accies.
Who were Aberdeen's opponents the last time they won the Scottish Cup in 1990?
Aberdeen played Inverness. Haven't a clue.
In 1990.
Oh, 1990.
In the Scottish Cup final.
Sorry, 90.
Did they time travel?
Oh, I got that one. Oh, that was a bad one for
me.
He was
all over the place, John. You must be feeling confident. He sounded nervous.
I think you got Martin O'Neill right, so I don't know how the rest of them went.
Okay. Which former Celtic manager started his playing career in Northern Ireland with Distillery? It was Martin O'Neill. So yeah. Gordon goes into a 1-0 lead. However, John equalises straight away. Neil McCann finished his playing career at Dundee. 3 appearances.
I was going to say Dundee. Did I get one for that?
No. Which country is former Rangers player Shota Avaladze from? I'm interested in this one because you shouted, I know this one.
I know.
Pass. Would you care to explain the thought process?
I was thinking pass maybe a new country, but it was Avaladze. I do know it. I can't believe I don't.
You don't?
Yeah, where's it start with?
It's Georgia.
Georgia on my mind.
And see if you're in any.
And Georgia on my mind.
See if you're in any doubt, just ask John and Isco Bride because he got it. So
he
goes
2-1 down here.
How many league goals has Lauren Shanklin scored this season? John said 25. It's 24. And there might even be a steward's inquiry in that one because it's very close. But none of you got 24. Who is the current manager of Partick Thistle? Ian McCall. You both got that.
No, I'm beat.
So John stays in front. In 2000, which team shared Clifton Hill with Albion Rovers? Would you know that, Roger?
I thought it was Hamilton Accies.
Dumbarton, apparently.
Was it really?
Yeah, I didn't know that myself. Producer Andy's nodding. If it's wrong, you just blame him.
No, it was never Dumbarton.
Just blame him if it's wrong. Yeah, well.
No, it was not.
Well, there we go. None of you got it anyway.
Well, I've got a good chance in the next one.
Who were Aberdeen's opponents the last time they won the Scottish Cup in 1990? When were Inverness Cali Thistle formed, Roger?
95.
Right, so yeah. It wasn't them then?
Highly doubtful.
No, it was Celtic.
It doesn't matter to me.
And John got it. 1, 2, 3, 4 for John. And only a 2 for Gordon DL. John, the sign ball is on its way. I know you played it down, but you can kick that sign ball around your living room till your heart's content over the next few weeks. Well done,
John.
No problem, Basil. Cheers, Gordon.
Brilliant. Well, that was John and East Kilbride.
Do you want to explain yourself?
That was terrible. That was really poor.
It was a bit poor, I've got to say, but I'm not really counting these ones, Gordon.
Is it null and void at the moment, is it?
Yeah, okay. We'll just decide that once the season gets up and running again with my results. But I'm not really. I'm delighted because I love to give out a wee bit of present there. I'm usually miserable with my balls, so it's nice to just give one out.
Roger, do you want to pick up on that one before I say something I regret?
I nearly fell off the couch. I just have to advise John, if you are going to get a ball and kick it about the living room just now, take all the ornaments and the vases out the way first. I've already felt the wrath of Mrs. Hannah for such things in the last 10 days.
Oh, really? I don't know what have you been kicking around the living room? Toilet roll?
Well, you've got, if you're self-isolating, you've got to entertain yourself. A few indoor games that should maybe be played outdoors.
Yeah, that's understandable. Right, we do have some breaking news. It's not great news. Unfortunately, Portsmouth tonight have confirmed that Ross McCrory has tested positive for coronavirus. As you'll know, the Rangers man is currently on loan at Portsmouth, where 4 other players have also contracted the virus. The squad members have shown mild or no symptoms and are self-isolating, but the news tonight is that Ross McCrory has tested positive. I mean, Roger, that's disappointing news. We wish him all the best. We wish him a really speedy recovery. But at the same time, it's maybe it was a matter of time before we heard of confirmed cases among Scottish footballers, because we've been a bit light on that so far. And the way things are heading, as disappointing as it is, and as much as we hope he's on the mend, maybe there's an element of it being a matter of time.
Yeah, I think it was a matter of time. I wish Ross all the very best. Ross and his brother Robbie, who's now of course on loan at Livy. They're originally from the village of Daly, just along the road from Girvan, where I grew up. So I've always sort of tracked the lads' careers. I hope he has a full and hasty recovery. And this is one of the things, Gordon, that I think has been missed when the English Premier League and other leagues are talking about bringing back football at a certain date. How can you do that with any certainty? You know, Mikel Arteta has already been diagnosed, Callum Hudson-Odoi, all of these Portsmouth players, various other players have shown symptoms and have had to self-isolate. If we as a country have still to see the peak of this coronavirus outbreak, footballers aren't immune from picking it up. So how on earth can people think football teams are going to get back to playing football when members of those teams are just as likely to contract this disease as any other members of the public? I think it's fanciful to set dates where we might be playing football again.
Yeah, that's it, Gordon. And I don't detect too much of this, but maybe this should come as a message to anyone out there who still thinks that we can just play it behind closed doors. We can just resume things and we can play it behind closed doors. How do you do that if the players aren't safe, if the players aren't healthy?
Nobody's safe, Gordon. Absolutely nobody save you. Just got to, you know, go by the government rules, follow what the instructions that you're getting, and hopefully we'll all get through this as best as we possibly can. But you're right, footballers are the same as everyone else. They can pick this up, and that shows you tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, Portsmouth obviously making that public tonight, Roger, that there may well be players out there who got the symptoms and haven't got it confirmed, or other players who have tested positive and have chosen, or their clubs have chosen to keep it private. I don't really know what the process is. I don't know if it really matters, but anyway, you know, that's Portsmouth that have announced that tonight.
Yeah, and I think other clubs, both north and south of the border, will be touched with this, yeah. I think it was the last count, it was 5 La Liga teams in Spain who had players who had tested positive for coronavirus, including 5 at one team at Valencia. Several Serie A stars, including the likes of Paulo Dybala, Juventus, have tested positive. So for me, it is not safe to start putting dates when football or any other professional sport can restart. You see, the Tokyo Olympics have been postponed. Obviously, Euro 2020 has been postponed. And I think you will be looking beyond the summer before we could even look at any professional sport restarting in this country and in Western Europe.
Yeah, I'm about to break one of my own rules here and be an absolute hypocrite, because I sometimes think that we compare different sports and different situations too readily, and it's very difficult to do that because, you know, you're dealing sometimes with apples and oranges. However, the fact that the Olympics, and remind me when that was due to start, Roger?
I think July 24 was the opening ceremony, and then for 3 weeks beyond there, and then of course the Paralympics would follow on at the end of that, Gordon.
Yeah, now again, granted, it is completely different because you've got different travel challenges, different logistical challenges, people coming from quite literally every corner of the globe and converging in one place. However, it does clash, Roger, with that notion that we might, I mean, bear in mind that the only deadline we've got set in stone at the moment in Scotland, I think, is the end of April. And then, you know, there was still that hope that maybe, you know, all domestic fixtures could be rounded off by the end of June and so on. So when you see events the size of the Olympics knocking it on the head, and that wasn't even due to start for a few weeks after that, it does make it look like we're only heading in one direction.
Yeah, and listen, ordinarily, you're quite correct not to draw comparisons between different sports, different disciplines. But in this case, the same problems, the same challenges do affect different sports because, you know, in terms of the Olympics, how could they guarantee the athletes in all the different sports would arrive in Tokyo free of coronavirus, or would arrive in Tokyo free from an environment the coronavirus was still in? And it's the same with football. How can anyone in football realistically put a deadline on starting again when no one knows when the players will be fit to play, when the fans will be fit to attend, and perhaps just as importantly, when the NHS and the emergency services will be able to attend these games? Because for me, the NHS and the emergency services are stretched beyond belief at the minute, dealing with clinical cases, dealing with the coronavirus at the front line. They can't be taken off that front line to give cover at football games, rugby games, or other sports tournaments.
That the way it feels at the moment, Gordon, that we're,
yeah,
and I don't hold that against anyone. You know, I'm not expecting people to dive in and make big decisions, but it does feel like we're just heading to the dates just getting pushed further and further back, doesn't it?
Gordon, we all love our football. As I said earlier, I was really looking forward to coming in tonight. Sometimes you get a hard time from people. It's not about that. It's just about, you know, try to get through this, and it's difficult times. I'm not even looking at when the next football is going to be played. I love watching my football, love being involved in it. It's all about keeping this country safe, keeping everybody safe as we possibly can. And then once that happens, Roger's right. Then we'll look at what is not important just now, is football.
Yeah, and the thing is, Roger, football can be a hugely important vehicle though for messages as well. And you've seen it in social media today. You've seen, you know, message from Neil Lennon, for instance, to the Celtic fans. I know the Scottish FA have been doing a lot, getting the likes of, you know, John McGinn and other players to record messages and put it on social media to try and get the message across. So if it helps, that's what we're here for as well. Something that's worth bearing in mind to all of you who are listening out there, and maybe if you've not quite fully got across, you know, what this virus can be like. Portsmouth have made it quite clear tonight that 5 members of the squad now have tested positives. All 5 of them had only mild or no symptoms but have been self-isolating now in accordance with government guidelines. So just in case you need a wee football example, Roger, to give you a nudge, don't think just because you've not got the symptoms you're safe to go about and be reckless. The message is fairly clear. I know there's certain industries might be struggling with it at the moment, but it's fairly clear. Stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives. That's the way the statement ends from Portsmouth.
Yeah, and listen, it's not fairly clear. It's abundantly clear. The Prime Minister outlined it last night. The First Minister outlined it again today. And all the clubs as well, be it Neil Lennon or Stephen Gerrard or Scott Brown or John McGinn or whoever it is. I see Motherwell putting a statement out this morning. The SFA have put statements out. Portsmouth tonight. I'm sure all your clubs have put it out as well. There's, you know, Ross County as well, I noticed today. It's hugely important that you heed the government advice. You quarantine yourself, you stay at home, don't break any of the rules. And the longer we do this, the safer we'll all be and the quicker we'll get over this crisis. Not just the biggest crisis to grip Scottish football in our lifetimes, probably the biggest crisis to grip our country in our lifetimes.
Okay, these are strange times indeed. We're trying to just give you a bit of a football fix, but of course there will be times we need to deal with the serious elements of it as well, and maybe even try and get the message across using football as that vehicle as well. So it is strange times, bear with us. We're just doing our best to try and keep you company, because it's going to be tough old times for people, maybe locked away, not going to work, not seeing their pals, not seeing their family. So you know, it's 6 o'clock. For as long as is possible, turn us on and get in touch, and we can have a bit of fun football memories together. Brendan is a Celtic fan in Carntyne at the moment. Hi, Brendan.
Hi, guys. How we doing?
Not bad, Brendan. What's on your
how
mind?
First of all, best wishes to Ross McCrory. Hopefully him and everybody else that's going through this is a speedy recovery.
Yeah, well said.
A couple of points. But the first thing, being on the St Mirren game 10 years ago, obviously a terrible, terrible night. I remember sitting watching the telly. But you know, I believe everything happens for a reason, and we got Neil Lennon as a manager out of that, you know, and Neil's been on to prove what he's done. Regards Tony Mowbray, you know, I think at the time when we took him on, he was probably the outstanding candidate, you know, for what he'd done at his previous at West Brom and at Hibs. So I don't bear any ill will to Tony Mowbray, because my memory of Tony Mowbray is not the short period of a Celtic manager. My memory of Tony Mowbray is the way he conducted himself in the tragic circumstances he found himself in as a player at Celtic. So, you know, I wish that guy nothing but the best. Going on to defeats, which still sort of rankle with you, wasn't a defeat. It was we actually won the game 4-3 against Juventus, but not going forward to, which seems a lifetime ago, the second group stage of the Champions League. You know, just that was, you know, a euphoric moment to just sort of, you know, to bring you straight back down. And incidentally, guys, that game has been shown tonight on BT Sport at 8:30. You know, for anybody that wants to sort of get a bit of football after you guys are finished.
There we go, Roger. That sums up the madness of football, because Brendan, and I'm twisting his words a little bit, to be fair, but the St Mirren loss has almost become a positive for Brendan, because it was the result that got Neil Lennon, and the victory, you know, the Juventus, what should have been a high, then turns out to be a low. So try keeping up with that roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah, what I will say is I quite agree with Brendan. Some great archive football on the television these nights when there's no live sport to be going with. Tony Mowbray, it was a strange appointment. I don't think he was the best candidate at the time, if you remember, Brendan. Celtic wanted Owen Coyle, couldn't lure him away from Burnley, who were headed for the English Premier League. They wanted Roberto Martinez, who was fantastic at Swansea at that stage. He ended up going to Wigan in the English Premier League and winning the FA Cup. And I think Tony Mowbray was third choice at the time. For me, he was at West Brom. I don't think at that stage of his managerial career he was ready for a job the size of Celtic. I actually think 10 years on, he's doing a wonderful job at Blackburn Rovers, and had the season not been brought to a halt, and it was, he might well have got Blackburn Rovers into the promotion playoffs at the top end of that championship, which, given the budget he's working on at the minute, it would have been a phenomenal achievement. So I think Tony Mowbray now would actually have been far better placed to be Celtic manager than Tony Mowbray was 10 or 11 years ago when he got the job.
Yeah, I think you're right, Roger. I think nothing beats a bit of experience, and I'm sure that, you know, we've had Stephen Gerrard coming up here for his first job, and I'll bet you that if he continues in management, which I think he will, and he looks back in, you know, 5-6 years' time, you realise things that you would have went about your business a lot differently. Even at my level, when I started out, you think, right, I'm going into management. I remember the first year thinking, well, this is a completely different job. It's so hard. You were taking everything on board. And I was very fortunate to end up being a manager for over 13 years. And you look back and you think, I wished I had that experience in my locker at that time. And you're right about Tony Mowbray. Played against him a few times. Terrific lad, I've got to say. But sometimes you've just got to take a step back, and that's what happened at Celtic. And you're right, what a job he's doing at Blackburn just now.
Brendan and Carntyne, thanks so much for getting in touch tonight. 01419511025 if you want to join Brendan on the lines. We are on Twitter at Clyde SSB, and you need to get your pen and paper ready, because I've got a full time teaser for you. We're looking for 10 answers tonight.
Get the good lady in the living room, Roger.
There are a few clubs involved, 10 answers, and I'll give you the question next. We're also going to hear from a Premiership footballer who believes that his fellow pros should be using this time to prepare for life after football. We'll hear from him next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Getting you full compensation is their goal. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Gordon DL and Roger Hanna here, keeping you company tonight. I'm Gordon Duncan, as always, trying where possible to give a little bit of a football fix back during these difficult times. Unfortunately, the breaking news tonight is not good news. Portsmouth has confirmed that Ross McCrory has tested positive for coronavirus. The on-loan Rangers player is amongst a few players at Pompey who've got the virus at the moment, despite having mild to no symptoms. So we obviously wish him well. Lots of you getting in touch on Twitter. Stacey Mills wishing him a full and speedy recovery. Stevie Chalmers, good luck to the boy, hope he recovers. Trivia Studios, all our prayers for a speedy recovery. Stay safe, everyone. That is the message. I know this is not exactly where you come to get a lecture about the way you should behave, but football can be an important vehicle for getting messages across. So if we can play any small part in urging you to just be responsible and look after yourself, which will in turn look after others, then we wouldn't hesitate to do that. So Roger and Gordon are here, and it is time for them to tackle tonight's full-time teaser. The chemistry's different though, I've noticed this. I mean, Hugh Keevans has been working from home. There's not that same teamwork, the eye contact, the mutual understanding on the full-time teaser. You're going to have to deal with modern technology and Roger from his living room.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, and to the people that are listening, and I just feel it's time that you've got to tell the truth, Gordon. If it's roles reversed, I'd be sitting with my iPad there now, waiting for that question to come out, and I'd be Googling. But knowing Roger Hanna, there's absolutely no chance that will happen.
Roger, I think we're going to have to get you to take an oath live on air that you will not cheat on this full-time teaser, because I can hear your laptop going in the background. So that's got me concerned, I must admit.
Can I just say to you, he's telling the truth when he says he wouldn't use his iPad if the roles were reversed, because he phoned me last night, Gordon, about 8:30. He was trying to download an app in his phone, and he couldn't remember his password, and he phoned me and asked what his password was.
I may ended up with the app. Now,
I was going to say, I'll introduce the story and you two can fill it in. I didn't want to embarrass you too much, but why not? Some things never change. When the Prime Minister made his announcement last night, and this company, like many others, tried to put some procedures in place, all of the pundits were contacted and they were urged to download a specific app which would allow them to potentially broadcast from home, like Roger is doing tonight. But you two, and you in particular, made a bit of a mistake here. And what did you do? Almost signed up for Wigan City Council.
Well,
or something.
Roger and I were going through the steps one by one, and we got the app. And obviously, I had to ask Roger what my password was, because I'm terrible with that. So we eventually got there, Gordon. Then we get the app up, and we're seeing each other on the phone. That's it. We're there. And then there's three sort of boxes. Choices, and I says, Roger, what do we do now? And Roger says, no, he says, I'm not getting into this. He says, I'll wait till tomorrow, just in case I make a mess of it. And then after a little while, Alison phoned up, found out that we were in the wrong app. We were actually in Wigan's council app, so we would have got our bins emptied a bit quicker than normal. But Hannah was involved.
It's a long run for those council boys for Wigan to come up and lift your bins in Motherwell, does.
I missed mine on Sunday morning as well, raging. Oh. You know the way I could hear the lorry, it woke me up, and I thought, oh, I need to go and put them out. And just as I ran to the window, I could see them driving out the end of the street, and they are full.
And that's you to next week.
That's me, stuck. a victim to that rota as well. Don't get me started. Anyway, right, to tonight's full time teaser, Eric Duff has sent it in. Thanks a lot to Eric. And the address you need is fulltime@clyde1.com. I don't mean to make light of a serious situation, but some of you have got a lot of time in your hands, so why not make up a full time teaser and send it into the show? I don't think this is anywhere near as difficult as some of your previous Tuesday efforts. So Roger Hanna, you better not be cheating. And Gordon Dale, I actually think some of these are right up your street as well.
Go.
Eric says, can you name the last 10 players to win Motherwell's Player of the Year and have also played for Rangers or Celtic? So can you name the last 10 players to win the Motherwell Player of the Year award and have also played for either Rangers or Celtic?
Scott McDonald.
Yes. Roger, I'll take one from you.
I have to say the late great Phil O'Donnell.
Yes, 1992.
Stephen Pearson.
No. I like Eric's research as well. He's very, very specific, very particular. He says this is according to the Wikipedia page of Motherwell's Player of the Year award. So there we go. What was that one?
Tom Boyd's too far back, is it?
Tom Boyd is correct. Stephen Hughes is not.
Stephen Hughes?
Nope.
Right, there's we can hear the Roger.
Can you give us a time call? I think it was going back a good few years.
Yeah, it's the last 10. Depending how you get on, I will reveal the time frame a bit later on.
Paul Lambert?
Yeah. All right, we'll leave it there. That's a good start because you've got 4 of the 10. You can play along with us, remember. Send us a tweet. We're looking for the last 10 players to win Motherwell's Player of the Year award and have also played for either Rangers or Celtic. Tom Boyd, Phil O'Donnell, Paul Lambert and Scott McDonald. 4 down, 6 to go. Easy as that, right? You're going to get... I fancy your chances of that one, I must admit. I don't always have full faith in you, but I do on this one. Let's hear a bit from Livingston's Chris Erskine, because he says he believes it's important players use their time off to build a good platform for life after football. Sounds very sensible. Mm-hmm. He's been running online personal training courses, trying to help people stay fit when they're in the house, and he hopes that they'll help the clients as much as they'll help him.
I think this period where we've got a wee bit of time off, if you're ever going to start something, probably now is the time to do it, while you've got that extra bit of time. So it's obviously, for me, something I would like to go into after football. And it's uncertain times with the football as well. I'm out of contract in the summer and don't know where I'll be. I would love to play for the next few years. So but I think you need to be ready at any time when your football career comes to an end, that you're going to have to do something else. So that was in my head, and now, especially when footballers have got that wee bit of extra time, that they could probably do something about it. I mean, it's going to be hard for all footballers. We're all used to being very active on a daily basis and training every day, meeting up with the group of boys, which is good for your camaraderie and stuff. So it'll definitely be tough for all footballers, as it will for most of the general public if it gets any worse and we end up in a kind of lockdown situation. So this will definitely help me in terms of that, and I think it will help other people as well, even in terms of almost like a community kind of thing.
I like that, Roger. I like that amidst these really difficult times, the possibility that maybe, just maybe, some good can come from it. How good would it be if we resumed and all of a sudden our footballers were fluent in different languages, had mastered skills that they previously hadn't even considered?
Yeah, and listen, you hear Chris, we had a feature in the paper the other day with his name, say Chris Miller of Morton, who is starting a personal fitness business down in Greenock Way, I think. And it's good that footballers, when they get to a certain age, they do look beyond hanging up their boots. We need to have good words for the work of Fraser Wishart, Craig Beattie and everyone else at PFA Scotland, who try and push players into, not quite further education, but encourage them to embrace greater skill sets that will open up new employment opportunities for them after they finish in the game. You know, people in the old days, they went into coaching or management, or they opened a pub. Now players have all manner of different opportunities after the game's finishing, and it's good to hear guys like Chris Erskine, like Chris Miller, like so many others who already, well, still playing at a high level in the game in Scotland, are already looking beyond that and planning for the rest of their lives.
Which reminds me, how's the vlog coming along? You said you were thinking about getting the Lycra on, setting up the bike, maybe doing a Peloton style spin class from the living room. How, any further forward?
Yeah, I'm getting there, Gordon. Yeah. I'm getting my wee gym all set up, and I'll be coming soon. And I'm sure everybody's looking forward to it. That's what it's all about.
Everybody's looking forward to it, believe me.
Yeah, I just need to know how to set it up, really. That's a good starting point. But I'll tell you what, Roger Hannah is my hero.
No, Roger, I am not impressed with you. Do you realise what you've just done, Roger? You've spoiled what I thought. You've spoiled what I thought was guaranteed fun towards the end of the show. Tell him.
When you were talking about our PFA, Fraser Wishart, who was a hero at Motherwell, won the Player of the Year and played with Rangers reserves.
He's right, I'm afraid. He's right, Roger. I thought it was nailed on.
I thought you two would have missed it out,
and at the end, I would have dined out on it for at least 30 seconds at the end of the show.
Well, there doesn't need to be that eye contact or the intuition, but even for all these miles apart, we can feed each other answers.
Brilliant. What about you, Roger? I mean, Gordon's going to vlog with his Lycra on. Are you thinking about taking up any new hobbies, learning any new skills, bit of cookery, bit of DIY, languages?
I'm not too sure. I'm reasonably busy during the day. We are actually home working. The keeping fit aspect of it, Daz was very jealous when I told him about the treadmill in the back room. So a bit of that, wee bit outdoors, good. Wee bit of the fresh air. We're keeping busy so far.
Okay, good to hear it. Got to keep body and mind healthy during these difficult times. Let's speak to Malcolm in Maryhill. Hi, Malcolm.
Hi there, how you doing?
Not too bad at all, Malcolm. How are you?
Yeah, well, thanks. Listen, thanks for keeping the show going. You're keeping a lot of insane people sane at the moment.
Trying our best, Malcolm. Trying our best. Thanks, have you got for us tonight?
Well, there's a couple. I was thinking, you talked about one of them. There's a club one and a country one, actually. In fact, it's two country ones. The Italy game. I've listened to the show for years, 20-odd years or longer than that. I've never even felt compelled to call up, but I'm still angry about it. That's why I decided to phone up. That Italy thing. That is the worst decision anybody's ever seen in the history of football. That was dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. People were in tears about that for months. The best part of it is, though, I've got a mate, he's got an Italian restaurant in Glasgow. I used to go and eat at least once every week. He didn't charge me. I didn't go for 3 years after.
3 years?
3 years I didn't go.
Just resented everything about Italy. Never ate pasta again.
Yeah.
Well, that was on the TV the other night, actually. There was a show on about that. I think McLeish got a phone call or something, didn't he, for some anonymous Italian journalist saying that everyone in Italy was saying that UEFA simply wouldn't let one of the major European powers not go to the final. I think France were in a precarious position as well at that time as well, or something. And
Malcolm's right, Roger. Is that not the way? That's the way the story goes, certainly, because we were in the group with Italy and France, and there is a claim that someone suggested. Oh, come on! You don't think they were going to have a Euros without Italy or France, do you?
Yeah, well, we were in a group with Italy, France and Ukraine, who had been three of the eight quarter finalists at the World Cup finals in 2006. So that tells you the scale of the task that Alec McLeish's team faced. And we came so close. That infuriating day, a Saturday night at Hampden, as Malcolm talks about, the injustice against Alan Hunt and the goal by Christian Panucci. And of course, Big Alec tells his story subsequently that an Italian journalist called him and alleged that people at UEFA didn't want Scotland at the finals. Finals were going to be Central European. They were split between Switzerland and Austria in 2008. They wanted Italy there. They wanted France there. They got Italy and France there.
What was the club one, Malcolm?
It was the other national one is, of course, I don't know if you mentioned it, Kane's equaliser on the 2-2 game.
Oh,
it wasn't a defeat, but that was a kicker. That was horrible. That was club one, a Rangers fan, I remember, they were going for 10 in a row. And the game that sticks out for me, the sorest one, I still remember. I think we got beat 1-0 by Kilmarnock at Ibrox. One or two or three games left in the season. Roger might remember the details of it.
It was a penultimate game. Ali Mitchell scored late on for Kilmarnock. That swung the whole thing back in Celtic's favour.
But we just knew, Rangers fans knew that was coming because the team was dying. That team was just literally running out of steam, and you could see it in every game. Gascoigne was away, and it was collapsing the further the season went on, and you knew it was going to happen. And that game stands out. You think, oh, you should win your home game against Motherwell, against Kilmarnock, and it just stands out as the game that killed 10 in a row.
Roger, Gordon's so happy that you're here, because see when someone says, you know, references a game from 20, 30 years ago, and they look for some of the details to be filled in, you should just see the terror on his face.
Yeah.
He can't remember what he had for breakfast, and then a big smile appears when you fill in the blanks.
Well, a lot of the time these games are games he played in, Gordon, and he still can't remember anything about them. So if they're games he didn't play in, he's absolutely no chance. But Malcolm is right. I think it was a penultimate Saturday of the season. Rangers were at home to Kilmarnock. Ali Mitchell scored very, very late. It looked as if it was going to peter out 0-0. Ali Mitchell won it. It handed Celtic the initiative. Celtic, I think, actually dropped points on the Sunday. I think they were maybe away at Dunfermline. Craig Falconbridge scored for Dunfermline. Celtic scored, it was a 1-1 draw, and that was enough to give Celtic just the lead going into that final Saturday. They saw it out, home to St Johnstone. The Rangers won against Dundee United at Tannadice, but it wasn't enough, and Celtic ended the hopes of 10 in a row.
Sees your wife walking by you shaking her head, what do you think she's actually thinking there? What would you think she's going through?
When am I making the dinner?
Malcolm, forgive me, just to take you back a couple of minutes. Did you say that you've listened for, you know, years, and this is the first time that you've been compelled to phone in?
I remember listening to Clyde commentary with Richard Parks and all that stuff. I'd like to hear some of that old vintage stuff.
Malcolm,
you know,
I'm going to use you as an example then. See, to everyone I speak to at the moment that says, brilliant, why is Super Scoreboard still on at the moment? What are you going to talk about? I'm going to tell him about Malcolm and Mary Hill, who's never phoned in before, and this week of all weeks, when there's no football, he phones in for the first time. That's why we're here, Malcolm. You've summed it up. You've got it in a nutshell. That was Malcolm and Mary Hill. Thank you so much for getting in touch tonight. We'll hopefully hear from you again, Malcolm. Hopefully we've not put you off for life.
No, thanks a lot, Magic. I'll definitely maybe not wait 30 years till I phone again.
Good man. 30 days. We'll speak to you soon. That was Malcolm in Mary Hill. Right, Eric Duff has sent this question in tonight, and he says, can you name the last 10 players to win Motherwell's Player of the Year awards, their own award, and have also played for either Rangers or Celtic? You've got Scott McDonald, Paul Lambert, Phil O'Donnell, Tom Boyd, and I'm gutted to say you've already got Fraser Wishart.
What about Lee McCulloch?
No. Roger, I'll take one from you.
I'll give you two.
Okay.
And of two who have been mentioned in the show already, Davy Cooper?
No.
Bobby Russell?
And Andy Walker?
None of them. We have 5 down 5 to get. We'll get them next. And Stephen is also coming up on the line.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. They play to win every time. Talk to Thompson's.com.
We're on the home straight in tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Roger Hanna has broadcast ever so professionally from his living room. He's not upset the family too much. Dinner must be almost on the way by now, Roger, though.
I don't really know. I've been isolated in here since just before 6 o'clock. I've absolutely no idea what's happening in the rest of the house. I built like the rest of the day, really, Gordon.
Yeah, best place for you, I would suggest. Gordon DL, you are in the studio with me. Unlucky for you. The question on tonight's teaser is this. A big thank you to Eric Duff, by the way, for sending it in fulltime at Clyde1.com. If you're struggling for something to do at the moment, make a question up, send it in to us, and we'll try and read it out on the show. So he says, can you name the last 10 players to win Motherwell's Player of the Year award and have also played for Rangers or Celtic? You've got Tom Boyd, Fraser Wishart, Phil O'Donnell, Paul Lambert and Scott McDonald. I must say, some good attempts coming in on Twitter for this one. Scott Liddell has got one of the tough ones that you're still looking for. Colin Moffat has thrown in three, what you would say, very good guesses, but none of them are right, so they can't be that good. But, you know, close enough from Colin. Educated guesses. What have you two got for me?
I've got one. I always said they're a goalkeeper, Ali Maxwell.
Yes.
Boom. Come on, Roger.
What about another goalie? What about Andy Gorham?
No.
I shouted him. I went for an oldie goalie, John Spencer.
Nope.
What about Bobby Russell?
No.
I went for him, Roger. You're obviously not.
Just trying to think back to big Motherwell teams. Craig Patterson?
Yes.
Great shout.
Okay, three to get. Plenty of time to get them. So we will leave it there. Let's speak to Stephen in East Ayrshire. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Gordon. How are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm fine, fine. Just finished making the dinner. Listen to your show.
All right, what did you make? Come on. Gordon and I are starving
here.
And my daughter was going on for burgers and chips. So see, just a council dinner.
But you can't go wrong with that, Gordon.
Oh, beautiful.
Is that inspired you? What's in Casa DL this evening?
Boiled ham, nice potato salad, and a pineapple on my boiled ham.
Right. Okay.
That sounds okay.
It's not bad, yeah, not bad. Yeah. I'd still go for Stephen's Burgers if I'm being honest. But
yeah, so would I, but unfortunately I've got to make them.
Each to their own. Stephen, we've been asking tonight, what's that, you know, that defeat that still really annoys you? It's 10 years to the day since Celtic lost 4-0 at St Mirren. Have you got one that springs to mind?
I've got two actually, but the most important one was the Partizan Brigade game, the 5-4 game where we got knocked out of Europe, but actually won it. And Ivan Golak, I think, was the manager.
That's right. Yeah, went on to manage Dundee United. That, I mean, Roger, that could be the answer to a number of topics on the show. It's the defeat that, or well, it's not a defeat, but you know, it's the outcome that annoys Stephen. But if you're talking about sort of memorable games or high scoring games, I mean, it fits the bill on quite a few of those, that one.
Yeah, it wasn't a defeat, but as Stephen says, it felt like a defeat. 5-4. Jackie Jackanowski got four goals, I think, that night for Celtic, and ended up still on the losing tide. There was actually comparisons drawn earlier in the season when Celtic went out of the Champions League qualifiers to Cluj. You know, such a high scoring game at Celtic Park, and you know, such an exciting game, but you can't take any excitement or take anything from it because ultimately you get knocked out of the competition. But the 5-4 one was just a crazy night. I think you're right. I think Golak was in charge. Gordon Petridge not play at the back for Partizan, I think, round about that time, long before he was ever at Rangers or the United at Hearts. And Jackanowski, of course, famously, four goals, knocked out.
I wasn't even born, Stephen. I was nearly born, if that helps. What was it, 6-6 on aggregate, Celtic going out on away goals? Is that the outcome?
I was that disappointed, I can't even remember.
I think that's right.
I remember for years I had it recorded, and I kept watching it over and over again. Hopefully that last goal of yours didn't go in.
Well, funnily enough, right, I was just waiting on the page loading there because I thought I want to find out a bit more about this game. Mm-hmm. And it's just popped up literally as Stephen said about the scorer of the decisive goal, who apparently, according to this page that just popped up, the first Google search on Celtic Wiki, Roger, you have an idea who the son of that goal scorer was?
The son of the scorer of Partizan's final goal?
Yes.
No, go for it.
Stefan Skepovic. There we go.
Of course.
A blast from the past. But it wasn't seen too often, an unsuccessful spell. Like I say, according to the Celtic Wiki, I have no reason to believe that that would be anything other than bang on the money. So there we go, Stefan Skepovic. You can note that one down. Stephen, you said you had recorded it for a long time. Do you ever have the bravery to watch it back, or was it the type of thing that just you couldn't put yourself through it again?
Well, I did watch it, as I said. I watched that maybe about 50 times, hoping didn't go in. And I think it was Paul Elliott getting his head to it and stopped Paddy Bonner actually saving it. It just went about an inch over his fingertips.
I see, Gordon, back in the days before Sky Plus, before you were able just to, you know, that would have been on tape. Stephen taped it, watched it 50 times, hoping for a different outcome.
Yeah, I remember Jackanowski with the four goals. What a terrific talent he was, but I can't.
That's it, that's all you've got. That's all you remember from it.
Yeah, because he was quite a stylish centre forward, can I just say that? I quite liked him, and good goal scorer. So, apart from that, I don't know who the referee or anything.
I'm not going to ask you who the ref was, don't worry.
I don't know anything like that. I'll leave this one up to Roger.
No, but I think that, I mean, that looks right. I'm now looking at the newspaper clipping. Penned by none other than Emmanuel Noel, Roger Bailey, Roger Hannah.
Yes, indeed, a man who turned 80 just last week, a doyen of Scottish sports writers.
And score Skepovic goal 88 minutes on the clock. So there we go. I think we're right. Thank you very much, Stephen, in East Ayrshire, giving us his memories on that one. I think we'll leave it there. We've got a couple minutes left, but I don't want to just shoehorn someone else in and have to cut them off as we approach the end. Roger, since we are drawn to a close, what is the current situation like for you, for newspapers? People keep asking me, what are you going to talk about on Clyde One Super Scoreboard? And you know what, touch wood, so far it's actually been a joy. It's been a real relief from all the madness that's going on. It's been great to hear all the different memories and talk about things that we maybe wouldn't otherwise have the chance to do. What's it like trying to fill a newspaper in these times?
Well, it's been odd so far because there's no live sport, as you know. There's not even any live horse racing in the UK, nothing at all. But there have been so many stories since the close down, and the financial implications for football clubs, the sporting implications for football clubs. We still don't know how this season is going to finish, if it's going to finish. If it doesn't finish, Gordon, how will the season be ended by the league? Will it be declared null and void? Will Celtic be declared champions? Will Hearts be relegated? Will Dundee United be promoted? So there are all those aspects still being debated. As you know, as we said, the financial implications, look at Hearts asking staff and players to take a 50% pay cut. Other clubs will follow suit. Fraser Wishart, who we've spoken about, at the centre of this, trying to defend the rights of his members, the footballers. So there are so many stories to fill the newspapers, to fill the TV stations, the radio stations, even though at the minute we don't have any live sport.
Yep, that's the power of football. We don't need live stuff to keep us going. So let's round off tonight's teaser where we've got the chance. We're looking for the last 10 players to win Motherwell's Player of the Year award and have also played for Rangers or Celtic: Tom Boyd, Fraser Wishart, Craig Patterson, Ali Maxwell, Phil O'Donnell, Paul Lambert, Scott McDonald. Three to get.
Stephen McManus?
No.
What about Tommy Coyne?
Tommy Coyne?
Yes.
Is indeed one of them. And did you know he signed for Celtic on this day in 1989?
So there we go. Well done, Roger.
Tied everything together. Tommy Coyne, two to get. Yep. We're going back to the 70s here. Now.
70s?
Mm-hmm. Now, I mentioned earlier on the show that I originate from Girvan. It's not the Girvan Lighthouse. It's not Peter McCloy, is it?
Do you know what? He would be 11th on the list, and we're only looking for the last 10. So you're extremely close, but it's not.
Bobby McKean.
Nope. So 1978, he won Motherwell's Player of the Year.
1978. Who was playing with Motherwell in 1978? Wasn't Bobby Watson.
Tom McAdam.
No, in a Hugh Keevan style. I think we'll just round it off with the initials. He's always inspired to do it this way. G.S.
Gregor Stevens.
Yep. And the last one actually won it twice. Won it for Motherwell in 71 and 75. And the initials B.W.
Bobby Watson.
Mm-hmm.
I had said Bobby Watson 5 minutes ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's fine. Just keep me on your toes. I don't think you did, but
I did, well, honestly.
Well, you've got it there. That's
thank
all
you.
Too. Roger, thank you very much. We'll speak to you next week.
Yes, all the very best, boys. Stay safe.
Safe journey home, Rod.
See, that delay was getting longer there. Right on time. Right for the end of the show. Thank you to Roger. Thank you to Gordon Dalziel. But most of all, thank you to you. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate these are very difficult, very uncertain times for everyone, but we're going to stay here as long as possible and just try and bring a bit of normality back to your day. So we'd love it if you would join us going forward. We're going to be here at 6 o'clock tomorrow with Mark Guidi and Jim Duffy. And Callum Gallagher is up next.
One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Compensation you deserve. When there's been foul play, talk to Thompson's.com.